Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode SP41, A Pint and a Chat with Spiral Dance.
Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary. This is the first of a new kind of show for us. We thought it'd be nice to get away from the standard interview type of show and do something a bit more informal.
Yes, this is the first in our infrequent series of chatty type interviews called A Pint and a Chat. And we've got a bit of an epic one to start with, to be honest. Tell us more about it, Gary.
Yeah, well, that's true. It does go on for about an hour and a half, guys. So, anyway, we went along to our favourite pub, the Giant's Rest in Sussex, and had a pint and a chat with the fabulous Australian band Spiral Dance, who were touring the UK back in 2014 when this was recorded. It should be a fascinating show.
And it was a superb chat. We had so much fun.
Oh, we did, didn't we? But before we start, shall we tell everyone how they can get hold of us?
That's a good idea. Well, you can chat to us on Facebook, or you can find us on Twitter. You can send us some feedback by emailing us at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com. You can also leave us some voice feedback by using the grey widget on the right-hand side of our website pages, because we love hearing your feedback.
And you can also give us a ring on 001-206-666-3775. That's 001-206-666-3775. And we could play your message on the show. You can find all of these details in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.
Right. So if you haven't heard the music of Spiral Dance, let's crack on by having a listen to their amazing track, Holly Lord, from their album, The Quickening. And then we'll go meet the guys at the pub.
Bending the wheat through the bracken, over the gorse, howling across the peat. Elf fires red in the sky, and there's witches on the wind. And it's into the darkness of winter we go, as the wheel of the season spins. And on this night serene, when our fires are burning bright, we'll call the Holly Lord to begin our pagan rite. We'll come with sprigs of alder, and we'll come with the leaves of yew, as we step out of the old and dance into the new. On the hills that light the bonfires to burn upon the sacred ground, shadows dance across the flames, to the witch bell sound. Spirits call with haunted voices from the other side. And it's into the darkness and out of the light as the earth turns with the tide. And on this night serene, when our fires are burning bright, we'll call the Holy Lord to begin our pagan rite. We'll come with sprigs of alder, and we'll come with leaves of yew, as we step out of the old and dance into the new. And beginning of our year, we'll call out to the ones of old to make the future clear. Beneath the moon of the elder tree and by the embers glowing red, they'll pass into the summer land until the winter's fled. And on this night serene, when our fires are burning bright, we'll call the Holy Lord to begin our pagan rite. We'll come with sprigs of alder, and we'll come with leaves of yew, as we step out of the old and dance into the new.
Today at the Giant's Rest pub, which is a stone's throw away from one of the most amazing hill figures, the Long Man of Wilmington. So we're here for a pint and a chat with the wonderful Spiral Dance. Hi guys.
Hello.
Hello.
And they are Adrian.
Adrian.
And
Paul. Yes.
And
Nick.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
And Ruth is here as well, yeah?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, jolly good. Glad to know.
It wouldn't be complete without you, Ruth.
It wouldn't.
You guys, though, have come all the way over from Australia to just come for this interview here in this pub this evening.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I just think that is so cool.
And Gary, I've just got to tell you that this is one of my most favourite parts of the world, the Long Man, because I used to live at Hastings 25 years ago, and I remember arriving in Hastings, and we did a trip through to Brighton and driving along this road, looking up, and I saw him on the hill and went, what is that?
That's unmistakable,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah, so I have a very, very special bond.
So, the track that we started off with that you heard was
Holy Lord from your album The Quickening. Can you tell us anything else about that?
It's much older than that, actually, from The Quickening. It was one of the very first songs I wrote, and it was written, I think, in 1995. And it was on the album Woman of the Earth, the first album we ever recorded, back in 1996. And I wanted a song that kind of conjured up that dark transformation of Samhain. So Holy Lord was born. But in the very, very early days, of course, there was no internet and we'd only just been tapping into the pagan scene in Australia when we first came literally out of the broom closet, so to speak. There wasn't that many people around that we knew. And so that song was written very, very early on in the journey. And I think it still stands up today. It's still one of my favourite songs today.
Awesome song.
Yeah. And the whole thing with wheat crops still growing later in the year and... so that's where Holy Lord came from. But it was a very, very early song, and we released it on the Quickening album as part of the 8th celebrations of the year.
Because the first 8 tracks were all Sabbath.
Yes, they were. Yeah, we wanted to actually do an album like that and to celebrate the Wheel of the Year.
To this day, that's still my favourite.
Really?
Yeah.
A couple of tracks from Woman of the Earth that I like. Your latest. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to. It's really, really good. Yeah.
If you listen to the first Holy Lord compared to the one we recorded later, there's different pronunciations and stuff because it was in the early days and we didn't have a lot of connection in Australia with people overseas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of interesting how your growth, your path,
absolutely,
path goes. So, but it's still the first one's still lovely, but the second one, The Quickening, is lovely as well on that one.
And it still creates a great energy when we play it on stage.
Yeah.
Actually, it's still a really good
I mean, the thing that I've noticed over the years is that you guys have developed a completely unique and very, very powerful sound.
Oh, that's lovely. So,
and it's one that stays with you as well. You don't forget it. It's very...
Yeah, it is unique, isn't it?
You know it's Spiral Dance. I mean, anyone who puts it on, you can tell that sound.
Yeah.
You know,
and I do think the Holy Lord has that really kind of sexy bass line.
He does.
Da dee da ba da ba dee ba da. I really love that. So it kind of builds that.
I'm not sure I could do that. So the question was, how did you guys as a band, how did Spiral Dance come about?
I lived in the UK from 1988 to early 1991, and I was first on my spiritual path then as a pagan, and I was just starting my journey. And I remember thinking, I'd been singing in a lot of a cappella groups and folk groups in Australia through the folk scene, because I'm a folk singer, that's what I do. And I wanted to start a band that was in touch with my spiritual beliefs. And I kind of didn't know how to. And when I went to Towsie Folk Festival and I saw a guy called Roy Bailey who was performing there, and he sang a song called Burning Times. Now, I know a lot of people poo-poo Burning Times, and I know that historically there's a lot of... it's not really correct. But it kind of... it was so powerful when I heard it, and I remember thinking, wow, you can sing songs about this stuff.
Mm.
Because I didn't know any pagan... I didn't know any pagan musicians. I don't even know if there were pagan musicians in those days in the mid-80s. There may well have been. I don't know. I hadn't connected with them. So I went back to Australia with this kind of... dream that I wanted to start, and I was into folk rock. I was into Jethro Tull, Steel Eyes Span, Fairport Convention, Matty Pryor,
awesome
Sandy Denny, the good and the great, June Tabor. And I wanted to
Ashes
start.
Ashes and Diamonds.
Yeah,
oh,
and I really wanted to start a band that was folk rock, but with the music kind of focusing on pagan, for want of a better word, because I was very new on my path in those days. I kind of didn't know where I was really sitting. I knew Wicca kind of wasn't speaking to me, but I was kind of on this journey. So I went back to Australia and we did covers. And so I was together with some friends, our first flute player, Karen, who was on there, and our first keyboard player, Richard, and said, I want to do this thing. And they went, yeah, let's get some other musos in. So that's how Spiral Dance started. And we weren't really in touch with any pagans in those days because no one was really at the broom closet in Australia. I'm just using that as a term for one
thing. I think they only just were here, to be honest.
Yeah, and it was kind of trying to find people that were like-minded and on the path. So, but we also had to be a little bit careful as well because we only really knew the folk scene.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to sell our music at folk festivals.
Yeah.
So I guess we went in, and when we advertised it, we spent about a year and a half rehearsing up songs. They were all covers, and we were looking for songs that had anything to do with magic, myth and legend, basically. And that's how we sold it. And we did. And Burning Times was on the repertoire. We did. We did a cover of Lorena McKennett's All Souls Night. Uh-huh. And my voice can't get that high anymore.
Mine never did.
We did Jethro Tull's Witch's Promise.
Yeah.
A couple of Steel Eye Spans, Jethro Tull songs, a couple of Fleetwood Mac songs, mm-hmm. Some Clannad stuff. Anything we could find, traditional folk stuff that had a leaning towards that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we've been going about a year, and we had two guitarists in those days, a drummer, a bass player, accordion player, keyboards, flute and vocals with harmony backing. And it was funny, we've been going for about a year and a half, and we played a folk festival, the Goolwa Folk Festival. And Goolwa is this beautiful place south of Adelaide on the... What are the lakes down there? I'm trying to think. My mind's gone blank.
Lake Alexandrina.
And where the inlets come in for the sea. And it's a very strong place, Aboriginal dreaming. There's a lot of strong dreaming lines through there. And I remember after the folk festival, leaving the festival and going to a place called Port Elliot. And it's amazing that you walk down to the rocks and you've got the sea. And I remember, and I'd never written a song in my life. And I remember standing on the cliffs there and this lyric came into my head. I am a woman of the earth and I stand between the sea and the sand. And I got in the car and went, oh, that's very exciting. So the first song started happening.
And that's where it was born.
Yeah.
And what about the unique sound you've got today with Nick's really strong guitar, Paul's accordion, and your amazingly clear voice over the top of everything is just
unique. Do you know, I think it probably comes from the very, very early days of when the band started with a chap we had in called Richard Tonkin, who was writing our arrangements, and he had a little bit of a vision for how the band should be. So a lot of the early arrangements came from him.
Yeah.
So I suspect we've just... And then, you know, over the years, people have left and gone and Richard moved on, and I just think we just continue to develop, and I don't know.
I wasn't there at the very beginning. I joined in 2000.
This is Paul, our superb accordion player, talking at the moment.
Shucks, thank you.
Sorry,
from yes, you'll hear the wallet opening. I wasn't there at the very beginning, but from what I can glean from conversations and also being part of the band since 2000, I think it must have been quite scary at the very beginning, because there was no one to, in inverted commas, copy, because there wasn't any bands, like you said, out doing that.
Yeah, stuff. You're doing one thing.
But in hindsight, there was the freedom. We had that blank canvas to paint. I think that's why the sound could develop, because there was nobody boxing the band in to say, well, you're that kind of band, you have to sound like this.
Yeah, good point.
Whatever we wanted to do. Yeah.
So you developed this very individual
sound. And so that's
sound.
Why we just said, hey, we can be whatever we want. And I think that's how it's probably survived and come on, because we've never had any shackles, if you like, to say that, hang on, you've got to conform, you know, because I don't know, having said that, whether we've been able to drag other people along to sound like us. I don't think that's kind of happened, and maybe that's to do with the quite tight genre we're in. There's maybe not that many bands about, particularly in Australia, yet following through, which is also sad, and maybe something we'll mention later too. But certainly, yeah, that freedom at the beginning, I think, was, though scary at the time, looking back, was probably a wonderful thing.
Advantage. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Who would you say that your biggest musical influences are? I mean, each of you, to each of you, really.
Well, Paul.
Well, I'm from the folk scene in England. I was born in England, moved out to Australia in 1998, and I was involved in the Morris dancing and folk scene in England before I went. Yes, that whole folk scene of Martin Carthy, one of the big turning points in folk music in my generation was probably Show of Hands. And we saw Show of Hands quite a lot when we lived here. I liked a lot of the accordion players because I play accordion. Mm. So things that Liza Carthy was doing with Saul Rose and in various bands and guises, Chris Wood and Andy Cutting, those sorts of folk singing, Kate Rusby to some in those early days too. So that was sort of my
my musical sort of folk music bringing up, if you like, so before I moved to Australia. So, and then I kept, because there was no one to sort of listen, and a lot of those people unfortunately don't tour in Australia very often.
Yeah.
It was sort of having to listen by CDs, and then of course the internet became so much easier to listen to different things.
And there's YouTube, of course.
Indeed, yeah. And you can see them doing it, which is even better.
And I guess for me, I think in the early days, for me it was very early days, was Kate Bush and Emmylou Harris, who I just think are just amazing. You know, I grew up listening to them. And then in my 20s, of course, there was Matty Pryor, Sandy Denny, June Tabor were a big influence. And those bands, you know, Fairport, Steel Eye, Pentangle.
Oyster Band.
John Renbaugh, Oyster Band. Yeah. And definitely for Spiral, it's like Jethro Tull was a big influence. So I would think those, for me, that's where those influences come. And Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, of course.
Because we're all 70s girls, aren't we?
Excuse me, I'm quite qualified.
Yeah, so they're kind of my influences, I would say. Yeah.
What about you, Nick?
Me? I go left of field from these guys. Totally left of field. I started sort of listening to Judas Priest and things like that, you know, when I was growing up, and Iron Maiden and all of those sorts of things.
I did once buy a Black Sabbath album.
And I didn't get into them for some reason, I don't know, something just didn't click. So yeah,
Steel will be my favourite all-time album ever.
Yeah, so. I only had a couple of different albums. I never really pinned on one or two, you know, you sort of, people get obsessed on
bands
and they buy all of their albums, but I was never one to do that. I buy one of them and go, yeah, well, I've heard them, who's the next one that's going to come along, sort of thing. So.
Whereas I have millions of Jethro Tull albums.
Yeah, I have to admit to having one or two myself. So.
And every good pagan has songs from the woods.
Absolutely.
Don't they?
Absolutely.
We all
they
have
do.
We all have that.
We still spin them.
We do.
Now and then.
Vinyl,
too.
Yeah. Wow, vinyl. Yeah, someone's just got into vinyl. The analogue sound.
Find Heavy Horses on vinyl. He's got my copy, but I didn't have the heart to take it off him.
Yeah,
so.
There's something about vinyl, isn't there, over CDs and iPods, I think. It's a much warmer sound. I want Spiral Arts to release a record one day. I want to have a vinyl record one day.
Yeah, big cover.
That's what I want to do.
Hey, marbleise it.
It's a pull-out poster.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, absolutely. So do you think it was the guitar sound that got you into playing?
I'd always wanted to play guitar ever since I was small, but I never did for some reason. Yeah. And then my fiance at the time gave me a guitar when I was, I think I turned 20 or 21 or something like that. So yeah, she said, "Well, here's, yeah." Well, I bought a guitar. She got me 10 lessons. So and it sort of took off from there. And I was right into blues and stuff like that. So Eric Clapton was one of my main ones, and Stevie Ray Vaughan and people like that. So and then it sort of progressed on. Then when I joined sort of Spiral Dance, I got into more of sort of Joe Satriani, big guitar, you know, heroes type thing. Not like I can play like any of them, but but then going to festivals, like we went to the Canberra Folk Festival, the National Folk Festival in Australia, and saw a guy like Tony McManus from Scotland, who's just phenomenal guitarist, and just his sound just absolutely blew me away, you know. And these people that can detune their guitars and just you just watch their fingers walk all over the fretboard with total ease, and you sort of go, well,
how the hell are you doing that?
Well, not how do you do that, but why do you do that? Where does your what makes your mind think that you want to go there, and there? Because that doesn't logically work out.
Sure.
My fingers want to go here, here, and here. So what's made you do that? You know. So yeah, they were my sort of influences. So yeah.
So going back to the really, really early days of Spiral Dance, one of your first albums you released was a wonderful one called Over the Ninth Wave.
Oh, that's many, many moons ago, Gary.
Yeah. my memory from, actually, this afternoon.
1997.
It was really?
1997.
I thought it was 92.
No, 1997.
Okay, there you go. My memory wouldn't have been wrong.
That was just after I joined the band.
Nick had just joined the band.
3 months after I joined the band, I was still writing the songs.
And we recorded that in 2 days.
Really?
2 days we recorded that in. We did the songs, the bed tracks and all the songs and overdubs in one day. And we did the chap called Vince Brophy, who's an Irish performer in Australia.
Because it's a mixture of narration and songs.
Yes,
song cycle.
Yeah, and he came and did the narration on the second day. And it was kind of interesting. That was a little bit of a journey for me because my father was Irish and my mother was English, and I'm first generation Australia. And I wanted to, I wanted to explore my Irishness a little bit. The English stuff had been there for a long time.
If we can introduce our listeners what the album is, it's actually almost a retelling of the Ulster Cycle, the Tales of Cúchulainn, isn't
it? Yeah, Cúchulainn,
It's pure Irish myth.
So it is very long in the tooth, but I wanted to explore that whole... I wanted to explore some Irish myths and legends, and I wanted to earn my stripes before I bought a clatter ring. I can't even explain.
You needed to believe that you belonged, I reckon.
Yes, I guess. So,
that's a really good point.
So,
my happy moments.
That's
really good.
And I'm talking very slowly, aren't I? I'm very impressed.
I know.
I'll have another drink of wine. I'll be off. I sat down with a whole stack of butcher's paper on my kitchen floor, and I'd been reading myths and legends, and I wrote all these characters down, and I kept for some reason coming back to Cúchulainn, which he wasn't a really nice character in a lot of ways, was he? But there's a lot of positive stuff as well. But I looked at the legend from all the women that surrounded him. So it starts off with the song "The Gathering," which kind of sets the scene of the Tuatha De Danann coming to Ireland and people gathering and how they came to Ireland and from there. I've got to think back a little bit because it's been a long time.
Yeah, The Gathering's an awesome song. Love that one.
Thank you.
That's all right. Would you mind if we took a quick break and listen to it?
We can indeed.
Side, a bard and his lady came traveling through the valley. I watched them ride along the path they'd been following into the realms where the ancients dwell, down deep into the shadowing, and waited till the wind lay still and for the call of the gathering. Nuahar of the silver arm, your magic sword is true and keen. Gather the people to your side, between sea and sky the war will be. Take the north wind at your back, let your druids set their powers free, and banish the sea gods from your shore to sail upon the eternal. Cities of the northern lands came for talisman to the De Danann's hands. Against the sea gods made their stand and won the heart of Ireland. along his dreaded armies marched to stand between the sea and sky. The shining moon, his spear he threw, enough to make the sea god scream, and killed Balor of the evil eye, as foretold in the druid's prophecy. And from the four cities of the northern lands came four talisman to the Dedannan's hands. Against the sea gods made their stand and won the heart of Ireland.
Was The Gathering by Spyrodance from their album Over the Ninth Wave.
Well, I haven't listened to that song for such a long time, because we released that in 1997, so that does go back quite a way.
There's no CD available. It's still available for download, though, and actually I've run the websites and all that stuff, so I see the downloads, and it's still quite popular from SoundClick. It's still
selling.
Are
you thinking of ever sort of remastering it, reproducing it at all?
If we could, I would, but it was done on the old DAT system with a single tape. So
sure. If
I could get hold of it, but I can't, unfortunately. I can't get the separate tracks. I have done a remaster of the whole lot at one stage, and it came out a bit better, but I don't think it'll come out good enough to re-release. Mm. But as I said, if I could get each individual track that we recorded, and then I'd work it from scratch again, I'd do it. Yeah.
And okay. It was written as a project to, which, funny enough, I was talking to Kerry Lee the other night about this, and we wanted to release an album that was something that you could turn the lights off, light the fire, light the candles, and put in and have storytelling by the fire, so that hence the narration leading into the song. So
which
the
is
song,
a brilliant concept.
Yeah, and the song, The Gathering, leads you into the story of, I guess, Corlan and the women that surrounded him, his mother, his wife, Morrigan, you know, Queen Maeve, Skala, yeah, and his initiate. Yeah, so that was the whole idea of Over the Nine Waves. But it was written a very long time ago.
And Finch Brophy's narration is beautiful. Yeah. He's got the perfect Irish little voice for it. It just is rich and beautiful. So
we thought of doing one perhaps for the Welsh myth maybe later on.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've only started exploring it recently, so that might be something down the track. So we shall see. And but there's so
you
much.
Heard it here first, thanks.
But there's so much to explore out there. Isn't there? There's so much, and I'm still on early days in my journey. So,
So do you all feel that you walk the Celtic Druid path, or are you from different paths, or do you not like to label that? Or
I do definitely. For me, it's been an interesting journey for me. For many years, I didn't know where I was kind of going, and I explored a lot of different paths, but certainly... And I just used to think of myself as a Celtic pagan for a long, long time, and it wasn't until I met a beautiful woman in South Australia called Lynn Wood, who was a beautiful Druid woman, and I used to spend time just in her garden talking, and I'd say to her, can you teach me stuff? And she'd say, just listen to the land around you, read the myths. And I'd go, and I'd want more of that, but sadly she passed away a number of years, about 4 years ago now.
Well, Lynn
has left us,
which
is really sad, which has left a big hole in the Adelaide community. Yeah. But funny enough, then we kind of had this path that led us to Kerry Lee and Dave Bard. So it's been interesting how that stuff happens. So the gap has been filled a little bit. So for me, that's been great. And I joined Obod a couple of years ago and did my Bardic course, and that was, I realised it was the right journey for me. Which was lovely. So that's where I come from now.
It's
so
great feeling when you get on that right path. It's like coming home, isn't it?
Actually wanting to pursue stuff and do stuff. Whereas for many years I did stand back and think, I don't know.
I should, but do I really?
And also living in Australia, it's kind of interesting. I've for many, many years I didn't actually know where I belonged. You know, I grew up with Irish and English parents. My brother was born here in the UK, but I was born in Australia, and I never really knew or felt that I really belonged there, and that's why I came to the UK and lived here. And I could live here again quite easily, not a problem. But and so many of the songs are about stuff from this country. And it's really only been the last 5 or 6 years that I'm actually feeling my roots are now going down in the soil. Maybe because my parents are now ancestors in the land over there. But so that's been a kind of a very interesting journey for me.
Yeah, quite a personal transformation.
Yeah, and it is hard not knowing. Sometimes you don't know where you belong, and I don't know if other people have that issue in Australia, but I certainly did. That's been a very big part of my spiritual growth for me, and accepting that, you know.
What about you, Paul? Because you've moved over there, haven't you?
Yes. As I said in 2000. So, and I didn't until I moved over and met the band, joined the band, and things. I really didn't know anything about paganism. Didn't really even know the word, I suppose, or any of it. And I've had conversations with different people. And in fact, when we were over here 2 years ago, when we were staying with Dav and Kerry again, Dav Bard said, "Oh, you've been to Glastonbury and stuff before, haven't you? You must have been." And I said, "Yes, I have." And the phrase I used was, "Yes, I've been there, but never with my eyes open." Mm. And that's kind of how I felt about
that's
it.
That's a really good way of saying
but,
it.
But it's interesting that as far as sort of a way of life goes, my parents live, and I was brought up in Suffolk, and they lived very seasonally. You know, we ate the food that was in seasons and all of those things. And I was sort of naturally brought up that way without thinking of it as a
as a thing, as a word, as a, mm-hmm. as a definition. It
I
was
love
just
the
way
Odette
that it happens.
Still goes and gathers all the berries and leaves from the heath and makes wine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If it involves alcohol, my dad's right there.
I call Paul's dad the druid of Rushmere Heath.
That's right. They live on the edge of Rushmere Heath. And yes, no, he gathers seasonally, you know.
And he's got his favourite oak trees where he gets his oak leaves.
And he's a cool dude.
And his favourite blackberries and his elderflowers and elderberries and all of the things. And yes, he just happens to ferment most of them. which is, you know,
good.
And again, and that was all the way. You know, they have their garden and you know, they grow their potatoes and their carrots and their summer salads.
So you were brought up very close
things.
To the land and the cycles.
I was always shown the stars and taught the constellations and things. It was mm-hmm. just what you did. It was never put as a particularly as a spiritual thing. It was just like, if you're out over Rushmere Heath, as we were as kids, because kids could go anywhere then, there wasn't the way it is now with the media and everything else saying it's so unsafe. We were just gone all day and night. And it was like, you know, you need to know where the plough is to, you know, because that's north. And you know that home is east from there. Yeah. You can get home. And it was just a thing that all the kids around did. Oh. We just knew that stuff. And I guess it was kind of bushcraft or something that you'd say.
Or that, just living it,
But
guess,
it was never
yeah.
called that. It was just one of those things, a life skill, you know. Yeah. And so it was interesting then coming in with the band and suddenly having words and definitions put to the things that was just a kind of a natural thing. I'd never thought about it as a spiritual thing before. Great, actually. Yeah. Because, you know, I just thought that was the way things were. And then clearly, I mean, I moved around for studies and things and clearly, you know, moved to cities and things. And it wasn't like that. But then to come to a city of Adelaide in Australia, miles from home with no family and that sort of stuff, to suddenly find people, you know, understood and did that and actually understood more than it just as a life skill but as a spiritual mm-hmm. thing and so it ran through them. It was brilliant.
That's been quite an awakening for you.
As I said earlier, it opened the eyes. I started to look at things differently.
What about you, Nick?
Me? Well, I don't know. I've always got my hands in the soil and went out in nature all the time. Like before I joined the band, I was always out in the water. So, and I was a gardener. So, you know, I was always surfing. Like every weekend before I joined the band, my weekend was taken up with surfing. That was my passion for like 8 years. I was just out there with nature, you know, and that was very...
Did you have disgustingly coloured surfer shorts?
Sorry?
Did you have brightly patterned, disgustingly coloured surfer shorts?
Surfer shorts?
No.
I've always wanted some of those.
No.
I can actually see you in those.
Yeah. Could you really?
I'm going to send you some.
I'm not lifting my kilt to prove it.
they're called board shorts, I think.
Oh, are they? Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the education.
Yeah. But you've been doing a bit of work with our seed group.
It's becoming more and more. I suppose I am. Everybody sort of says, oh, yeah, you're sort of walking the druid path, even though I'm very sort of solitary.
That's the reason for the question, really.
In a lot of things, I'm very on my own. You know, as much as I like being around people, and I like people and everything, I like my own space and this, that, and the other, and I like to just spend time on the land. Recently, I've moved house and everything, and I've got a nice block of land and everything that needs a lot of work to bring it back because it's sort of farmland, part of it was. So I want to get things happening again. I want it to come back to life. I want to plant things and get the wildlife back in, all the birds and everything.
Can I just mention that where Nick's moved, because he probably won't say this, but he's moved to a place called Willyaroo. And the land there, Willyaroo, yeah. Willyaroo. But it's actually the Aboriginal name, and it's on Peramac land. And the Peramac people owned that land. They died off due to smallpox when the whalers came to Australia.
Oh,
so it's Peramac land. And it means men's initiation place. And there's a very strong dreaming line through there, which is the goes from the Peramac down to the Nunnandjeri people. And it's interesting, that's where you started playing the didgeridoo. Yeah. And I really think that it was kind of like the land woke you up to play the didge, and the didge woke the land up.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's that sort of stuff.
That's a circular link.
And
it's a beautiful spot.
Tell us a little bit about dreaming lines, because I know a lot of our listeners won't understand. You've mentioned dreaming lines a couple of times.
It's very complicated, the Aboriginal dreaming lines, and they...
Would you say they're like to be fair, like ley lines?
We're probably not even qualified you know, I feel like Adrian said about not belonging. We don't really own that stuff enough to. So,
but there's song lines. The song lines run through the country, and one tribe will have a song line that they will walk the song line. It will guide them through Australia, and it will link up with another tribe's song line. Mm-hmm. And that there's a
so belief. These are spiritual lines. Spiritual lines of power.
Yeah, yeah, and there's this whole belief that they can. If a woman, an Aboriginal woman, is pregnant, she will walk a line, and the baby will pick up the song. It's just part of their their dreaming of the song line.
So it's their teaching as well. Yeah, their dream line is that interconnection with the land and
they lead to things like water
and all their
where there's going to be hunting and well. So I look to be honest, there's a book called Songlines called by a chap called Bruce Chatwin. It's really worth a read, but still you struggle.
It was just a little bit to catch up, so people knew when because you mentioned the dreaming lines.
And I do that very respectfully. There's a lot of things I mention the new songs that I write, and for many years, people were saying, "Why don't you write about some of the Aboriginal myths and legends?" I thought, "They're not my people. It's not my. It's not.
But I
also do want. I do want to touch with their ancestors. It's kind of hard to explain. It's
you
a
must
weird
have a
position
with
we're
the
in.
Land by now. You must have your own connection
with the land.
Absolutely.
Well,
Adrian said, I mean, it's obviously very sad, but a few years ago she said, I have ancestors in the ground now because sadly her parents have passed. And that was a bit of a change, I think, for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And finally getting to a stage in my life where I thought. And also because of what white men did to the Aboriginal people, I don't think we carry a lot of guilt, but we kind of there's a lot of healing yet to be done.
Yes.
There's a lot of healing yet to be done with the Aboriginal people. So I'm kind of it's finding that balance, I think, and I'm still finding that balance, and that's been part of my spiritual journey for the last 5 or 6 years. So. Yeah, and I want to understand more, but I have to be very careful. But I'm still learning. I'm still learning the myths and legends of my people. So
yeah.
See, I'm the same as Paul because my roots are here because I was born here. I was born in. I was born Surrey.
Yeah, where was I?
Hello. Yeah, that's right. well, there you go. So we moved out as one of the last of the 10-pound ponds in 1973. Mm. We were one of the lucky ones. We got to fly.
Oh, you weren't on the prison ship.
No, I weren't.
And you should be proud if you're on a prison ship.
So, yeah, I'm slowly finding that it's... England's my roots. I feel my roots are here, but Australia's my home, if that makes sense. So, I don't think I could ever move back to England, but when I come here, it feels like home.
Yeah.
It feels very warm
and
very right for me, but when I go home, I go, this is home, this is where I belong.
This is where I kick back and put my feet up.
And also about connecting with the land there and feeling... For me, it was very important to stand under that big southern sky and go... I belong here now, and that took me a long time to do that. And you know, this country I love, Albion, is like it's so much here in my heart. But I love Australia. You know, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
A lot of your songs as a band are a bit about some of the most amazing powers of nature. But you've also written about things like the Fae. Folklore. You've got songs like "Weaving the Summer," which is about the turning of a wheel, and
that's very English. That is just not right for Australia.
And it's really all about somewhere just a mile or two from here. From
I
the
absolutely
very place.
Love it because it's so local. Yeah. It's a fabulous song.
And there's your song "Fairy Tale,"
which was written for a kids' show, actually.
Oh, really?
There's a show called The Garage with Crow and Crombie with this giant crow and a giant goanna, people in costume, and they have a band on every week. And we wanted to write a song that was kind of for kids, but kind of a little bit dark, and you know what I mean? So we wrote Fairy Tale. And that was a long time ago, too.
So out of all those things, and you've covered a lot of things there, which inspires you the most? Where would you rather, what do you want to write songs about?
I don't get to choose. It just happens.
Good answer.
I just sit there and something will come. I might be. Sometimes I read a book. I might read a line in a book and I'll go, oh, that, and then a song will start. It just depends. Yeah, I don't get to choose.
It's the same with tunes for me. I'd love to be able to write. I guess I'd love to be able to write songs to order, but that almost never happens. Yeah. I noodle around and then suddenly I find something that I like and it turns from a riff, I guess, to a tune, and that's how it comes. But it comes when it wants to, not. You know, I mean, Adrian will often say, come on, we've got new songs, find some tunes.
Yesterday.
Rarely does it come like that. It simmers away inside, I presume, but then when the time's right, it's birthed somehow.
So what we're looking at in the corpus of Spiral Dance discography is an overview of yourselves and your experiences and those things that have in totality inspired you.
Yeah.
And I don't think I could come up with another sentence as full as beep. As
yeah, actually, yeah, that's true.
That's excellent. No, but I never thought of it, but I think that's absolutely it. It's part of your learning.
I'm exactly the same as well. I don't get to choose either. Adrian just says, I want music to this song, do it now.
Oh, that's... Do it. No, that is so not true. Because sometimes, a lot of the songs I write come with a melody as well. But sometimes they don't. I might have written something down, I have the lyric and it's just a poem, and I might noodle around on my guitar or piano, I think nothing's coming. But what's really interesting is sometimes I'll go to Nick's place, this has happened on numerous songs, he'll say, oh, I've just been fiddling around with this tune, he'll play it, and I'll think, and I'll start singing, the metre of the lyric will fit.
So one of the first examples where that happened was Magic.
Silver Doorway.
I'd only just joined the band, I haven't been in it probably 4 months,
yeah,
even that,
long, no.
And I was just playing around at home doing some blues sort of stuff and mucking around, and then I sort of said to Adrian, I've got this riff going on, and she went, I've got a song I've had sitting there for like a couple of years and nobody's ever been able to put music to it much as I tried, and it worked perfectly. Everything you've just written just works spot on.
Oh, that.
So I said, he can stay in the band, he can't
Well, that shows
we'll
you it's
keep
meant
him
to
he's
be
a keeper.
Yeah. Well, if I can interrupt you for just a moment, guys, we've got a young lady just come to join us at the table. can we say hello to this is, I believe, this is Kerry Lee, isn't it?
Oh. Hello.
Hello, Kerry.
Hello.
It's good to see you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourselves?
We're good.
We're
good.
Awesome.
Do you mind joining in the conversation?
Yes.
Excellent. And we've been having the best time with Dave and Kerry, I have to say. And we leave tomorrow and we're going to be very, very glum to say goodbye. Again, but we will see each other again, because we have this lovely exchange program going on between Australia and England, and it's working fabulously, I think.
Exchange spiritual students. I know, we're quite concerned that they're going to come to Australia and just not come home one day.
If you keep Oscar here, you'll be right. If Oscar comes over with him, you're in trouble.
Oscar is awesome.
We have to hold the dog hostage.
He's very smelly. He's
been dancing around in muddy rivers. So
Oscar is Dave and Kerry's dog. We'll see if we can find a photograph of him for you so you can see. He's lovely. Why is he very smelly?
He's been dancing about in the sacred pools around the camping.
He's a golden Labrador, but last I saw of him, he was more of a black Labrador.
He really is a water dog. I'll say bog dog.
Bog dog. Oscar the bog dog.
I wanted to make it quite clear that this dog is not a normal dog. He's the size of a small pony for a start.
Yes, indeed.
It's true. And he's still a puppy yet, isn't he?
He's not quite 10 months yet.
Mm. Yeah, good luck when he grows up. If ever. When did you start touring outside of Australia?
The first time we went overseas was to America to a thing called the Council of Magical Arts, which was 2003. It was quite bizarre, actually. We'd just finished, I think we were recording the CD Magic, and we were back from the studio and the phone rang. And it was this chap saying, oh, hello, my name is Paul Brown and I'm ringing from Texas, and we'd like to book Spiral Dance to play at our next Samhain gathering. And I burst out laughing. I was like,
yeah, go on, pull the other one.
Which one of our friends is putting on a Texan accent?
But it turns out Paul is from England, and he was very serious, and they got us over. And we actually saw him in Norwich last week. Hello, Paul Brown, if you're listening to this.
Wonderful man.
Lovely guy, and he really believed in us, and he got us over, and we did it. So it was the first time. And we did America a couple of times, and I guess we didn't venture into the UK because no one was playing our music here. People in America
knew who you were.
Knew who you were, but there wasn't a lot of kind of interaction going on with the UK. And funny enough, when I made the connection with Dave Bard, and I contacted him when we pinched his song "Spirit of Albion," which, really very much, which is another story, but that was kind of our first connection into the UK, and then it was just fantastic. We came over a year and a half ago and did a few gigs with him, and it was just lovely.
But that whole connection too happened because of America, so isn't it? How funny how things
Indeed,
intertwine.
Yeah.
We heard that
song. Can I tell
being
this story?
Yeah.
Everyone's heard this story, bar you guys, probably.
We need to hear it. We need to hear it now.
We were at the Council of Magical Arts, and they have, and they're amazing. These festivals are huge, and they drive around in golf buggies. And we were driving down this. It was a traders. They had all stalls. Have buskers and Blackpool concerts. And there was this couple, a man and a woman, singing this song. And I remember going to the guy driving our buggy. Stop! I've got to hear this song because I'd heard the lyrics. And we sat there listening. And I was like, wow. And I said to them at the end, you know, that's great. Where's the song from? They said, oh, it's done by a guy called Damn the Bard, which was hilarious. So I got back to Australia. I thought, I've got to find out who this Damn the Bard is, and I did find him. Through various
after several things. Spellings in Google, find Damn,
and we connected. So, and hence, I said to him, would you mind if we covered your song? And he said, no, but I've got a podcast. You go away, go and do that by all means. I'm talking faster.
No,
you see,
another wine.
Half a glass of wine. And send me some CDs and I'll play them on my Droidcast. So there was this lovely little connection kind of happened. And then about a year and a half later, 2 years, I emailed him and said, come to Australia, we'd love you to come to Australia. So Dave and Kerry came to Australia. So hence that's how that started, through the
yes.
American.
Mm-hmm.
So did you do the whole magical golf carts thing as well?
Magical golf carts are a standard thing for American camps. They're fantastic.
Yeah?
Really?
Yeah. Can I name drop?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
I have ridden in a golf cart, raced, in fact, around one camp with Celine Fox. And it was hilarious. She was driving, and we were racing this other
golf cart. Oh, you were co-driving.
Yeah, I was co-driving. I was hanging on for dear life. It was hilarious. Those golf carts. I need one.
Was that somewhere in Florida by any chance?
No. That was at PSG. I can't remember.
The Midwest somewhere.
Because we did FPG and they do the same thing. You have a few drinks and you go hooting around in
golf. I want to have a go.
But the American festivals are wonderful because they own a lot of their own land and they tend the land and keep it and they put their facilities, their stage and you know, the dining halls and things on them and they are really, really wonderful.
So you've toured some of the USA and now the UK. Mm-hmm. So what are your future plans for the band? Where do you go from here?
Come back to the UK.
I'm jolly glad to hear you say that, sir.
But I think the reciprocal spiritual agreement between us is a given. I hope.
Late last year, sadly our drummer and fiddle player had to leave us for various reasons. So we're rebuilding the band. We've got a new drummer and bass player and fiddle player coming in soon. But we're also going to be working on three-piece stuff so we can kind of tour as a three-piece, and as a four-piece, as a five-piece, depending on how we can do it is the plan.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a stack of songs sitting there that I really, really want to record. We've got to arrange them first, really. And Paul's got tunes sitting there, so that's kind of...
Maybe they'll come one day. Hopefully.
We've got a busy time kind of rebuilding the band a little bit on one level for Australia, and then looking how we are going to work with touring as the three of us down the track. So we can probably think about touring every year rather than every second year.
Uh-huh. I've always... again, for hindsight, looking back and just, you know, mulling what's happened, how blessed we've been to do the things that we've done and how things have turned out. It's always been a little bit by chance, and it seems, at least. And I've always been surprised. If I had to have made a prediction where Spiral Dance would have gone earlier on, I would have suspected Canada.
perhaps more than America.
Yeah.
And yet we've never been there, and yet I know that it.
Okay, well, let's all send out those positive vibes.
Well, indeed, maybe. It wasn't really why I said it, but that's just where I've sat, and I've always been slightly surprised. To say that out of the blue call from Paul Brand to go to Texas was the first one, and maybe that's why it nucleated to North America. But I would have predicted from the way I think our music sounds and to what I understand is going on around the world, I would have thought Canada would have been more of a draw maybe than main America, but yes, maybe
our eyes are being opened so much here. I think in the UK we've just played the Mercian Gathering, we've done a fabulous fairy ball, and we did a couple of concerts with Dave Bard, which was awesome, and we finished up with the Mercian Gathering, and that was just amazing.
And we do so stuff more to do as well.
We do stuff in Australia, but it's a population thing.
Mm. And a tyranny of distance thing as well. Getting everybody in their various communities together in Australia isn't just a couple of hours down the road on the motorway like you're able to do.
And next weekend we're playing at the Australian Wicked Conference, which they have every year in Australia. It's held in a different city every year, and it's not just Wiccan. That's kind of an umbrella term. It started 35 years ago, I think it started, and there was lots of Wiccans running it then, but now it's more of a pagan gathering for people of many paths, and whoever takes it on in each state runs the ritual and runs the workshops. So we're playing at that next.
It's in Victoria, in Melbourne.
It's in a place called Marysville, which was burnt out really badly in the bushfires three years ago. When Black Saturday went through and completely razed the ground. So we're having it there as a healing thing for the land, but that's a 9-hour drive for us.
And that's our most local city to Adelaide, is Melbourne, and so that's the closest.
It's just outside of Melbourne, so we'll be doing that next Friday. We'll be driving for 9 hours and then driving back on a Sunday.
I've done a nine-hour drive once, and that was from the south of England right up until almost the Scottish border, and that was hoofing it.
Poor Nick did one the other day. It was just about a quarter of the M25.
Took me about the same amount of time.
Oh, you met our big car park.
Yes, the biggest car park. But we had to laugh because we were in Hastings on Tuesday night, Tuesday night, seeing the fabulous Keith Leach and all the fabulous things they do down there. And they said, "What are you doing tomorrow?" And we said, "We're going to go to Hever Castle." And they said, "Oh, that's quite a long way away." And it was like an hour and a quarter. It was hilarious.
So it's that distance means a different thing, obviously, in Australia to England. Yeah.
So I notice a noisy rabble have just entered the premises.
Shall we take
a quick break
there? We shall take
a break. Sure. Let's have a listen to your wonderful track, Fay Dance.
Okay.
Sings with energy.
to tell. On a jasmine centerpiece, her voice will weave a spell. Her song will carve a rhythm, her spirit will sing the rhyme. And with an endless rhythm, you'll dance the tune of time. Dance, dance, weave and spin. Do you know the place you're in? This is where it all begins, in this land so wild and fair. Come closer to the fire bright, flames will give you second sight. Welcome to this endless night, for you've come to the land of fairy. Sister of the green wood, all birth in the sky. Sacred world is round within your mind. The wild folk beat their drums, call to the knowing. Dancing to the ancient beat, feel your wildness flowing. And the silver echo of her voice from long ago. Dance, dance, weave and spin. Do you know the place you're in? This is where it all began. This land's wild and fey. Come closer to the fire bright. Flames will give you second sight. Welcome to this endless night, for you've come to the land.
Was new to Sylvan Doorway.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was new.
Ah,
yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Come sit down.
Hello. Hi, Josh. Hello.
The boys have arrived.
He's not muddy. What are you on about?
Smelly.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be really interesting listening to this, isn't it? And going, what's been chopped and what hasn't. Yeah.
That's
going to be really funny. Going, look at all this chopped at me.
We have done a couple of interviews with Dave and Kerry sort of just there at the time as well.
I think that's lovely.
You kind of quite often turn up in our show, don't you?
Yeah, we seem to be kind of regular pop-ins. You are.
As opposed to Mary Poppins.
Hurrah. Kerry's a very good Rhiannon, aren't you?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. She's our queen.
So, guys, we were talking about you touring. Yeah? Do you feel that the band touring has become part of your spiritual path? Is it something that's become something that is doing something for you spiritually?
Yes and no. Yes and no.
Well, thanks for that.
Well, no, there's times we meet people or do things that really enrich us and are part of the path, and there's times that doesn't happen. There's times, I guess, things happen.
There's been a couple of times I've been quite horrified, actually.
I think it depends what it is. And what we're doing. Certainly we've met some amazing people over the years that have...
It's definitely affected your growth in certain ways.
I think the yes and no is a little unfair. I think clearly it's influenced us. I would suspect that if we hadn't toured, I don't know if Spirodance would still be going, to be honest. I think it's given us a new audience, a new challenge, something to look forward
That's
to.
That's quite an amazing thing to say. Things.
No, yeah. I think so, because as we mentioned briefly before, Australia is a very big place with people scattered a lot, and it's difficult to keep doing that. And I mean, I've got no idea, but I just suspect that we could have got to a point where it was just
We do need to get out to keep doing the same things, keep in touch with people.
Either we'd run out of inspiration, or it would just, you know, just getting too old and sad to do it, and we just couldn't do it anymore, and we'd run out of that drive. But when somebody gives you the chance to do something new and exciting and meet new people and all of the influence that brings, you gain that drive. So,
and I think some places speak to you more than other places. Mm. I think that's kind of interesting, I think. Yeah.
Same question to you guys, really. Do you find that touring has affected your development, your spiritual path?
Yes. For me, it has.
To me, playing live is what it's all about.
Mm.
I love recording, but you do it once and then you don't do it again, and then you've got an album and that's it. And I love writing, but actually, you know, hearing those words from Spiral Dance, they are the Spiral Dance are a fantastic live band. That's when they come
they
alive.
Are. Without a doubt.
And so that energy of playing live in front of an audience with all the risks of bum notes and everything else, but with also that fantastic sort of circular energy that happens when you have an audience that is behind you.
Yeah.
The connection.
And the connection, and that sort of energy just spirals, and it makes me play better, and then they respond more, and then I play better, and they're like, you can't beat that. Mm. And that, to me, is a spiritual experience. You know, playing live is what it's all about, you know. So, absolutely,
I think further to that, the idea, you know, you expand on that. And for me, as a non-musician, I kind of go, I'm along as kind of roadie and other things.
which the fabulous sales city sales lady.
The sort of kind of, you know, help person.
You're the one that keeps us all sane.
The voice of reason.
But for me also, you see the kind of magic that happens with the music, with the community and the, you know, the connections that happen. Music brings people together and expands on the magic that happens, that these guys catch in the air and put through, you know, their instruments and their vocals, and the communities that come together are so happy to be in each other's company. I mean, people who wouldn't necessarily kind of spend 10 minutes kind of talking to each other have something in common. They have this thing and this that lightens their life and lightens their feeling and can make a dull, miserable day just so much better, you know.
Brilliant.
And it's a community thing.
Yeah.
A recent example, I left England for Australia. At the time I was living in Norwich. That was my hometown for 7 years. And we played in Norwich just a week or something ago. Dave's never played in Norwich before. I couldn't believe I was going back to my old home, effectively, to play in Norwich. And the atmosphere was amazing, wasn't it? As everyone said, this has got to happen again. You know, we want it to happen again. The audience seemed to want it to happen again. The venue, the Puppet Theatre, want it to happen again because it was such a great night. And it will become, I hope, that the music there will become a catalyst for everything. So everyone gains, in that experience.
Superb.
And that's a wonderful thing.
Sorry, Paul. Is that Oscar trying to escape?
No. It's Oscar seeing another dog just
passed. Right. Oh, this should be fun, guys.
So he wants to go and play.
I know for me personally, there's places I just really, really want to go back to, and there's other places that I've kind of gone, it didn't feel right for me to play the music there. I guess it just depends, doesn't it?
So tell us a little bit about your last studio album.
To a Silver Doorway. I had to actually think about that. A lot of the songs on that had been sitting there for a long, long time, because we had gone through a few lineup changes. So there were things that we needed to record for the sake to get them out. Because I get this thing, if I've written lots of songs, they're sitting there. I have to. Dave Bard had a lovely. I remember we were talking about this a number of years ago, and it's called writers of constipation. Yeah. So you get like a backup of songs.
I'm glad you're polite there, guys.
And if I find if I've written a few songs and they're not arranged and we're not playing, I struggle
with
new
write
stuff
more.
To come in, and it's like I want them to be birthed. Yeah. So I kind of write the songs and take them to the guys in the band, and they arrange them, and they're birthed. I don't know. And then I can write something new. So I think with Sylvan Doorway, there was a lot of songs sitting there that we wanted to record. And so that album, that's why it was a double album. There was a few things on there.
But the title track, and I'm really introducing the album, that wasn't written. That came
Really?
Yeah,
nothing,
yeah.
Sylvan
Doorway. When I was doing my Bardic course through Robot, and I'd written a poem, and I remember thinking, this will never be a song. I think it's going to be a little intro. I'll write it on the cover. You know, it'll be like it'll be in the notes, the liner notes, and it was really funny. It was just that small, very first verse, and it was just before summer solstice and Christmas time in Australia. And Nick rang me and he said, "Oh, I've just been noodling around with this tune," and I went over there and I thought,
We could tell you the truth. I actually came home from my Christmas show slightly tipsy and thought, I'm just going to play around with the tuning on the guitar and detune it and see where my fingers end up. And that's how the whole of Sylvan Doorway came out. I know it's not really that wonderful, dreamy thing that people think, oh, he sat down and he worked out, you know, beautifully. But
That's the inspiration, the real magic.
God used me for exactly.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I went over there and I started singing Green Shadows Bow to the Rising Sun. And then I got home and the next two verses kind of fell onto the page, which was really interesting. So that's how Sylvan Doorway.
But then it really became the focal point for the album and the title. And the whole design concept of the artwork and things like how it all comes together, you know, it's suddenly you get a colour from that, you know, Sylvan Doorway. It had to have a green feel, and the whole thing, you know,
it was lovely.
Developed
the girl
there.
That does our artwork, Louise, I rang her and I said, "Can you do an album cover?" And I said, "I want to call it this," but I hadn't actually said to her about the song and about the poem. And she came over and I said, "I've written this song. I can't believe it's going to be the title track." And she read the words and she went, "Oh my God." And then she showed me the painting. She pulled it out and there was this, it was just the visuals of the song.
Oh, awesome.
It was, yeah, which.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, before we go to a break, maybe we could listen to that one in the break.
Yeah.
Before we do, Josh, have you heard these guys play?
I haven't actually.
Not that long. Really sort of like cancels that question.
You're supposed to go, yes, we
I was going
to
say, yeah, they're amazing, or something like that.
I was thinking this while I was going on the podcast. However, Josh is going to have an arranged marriage with Paul's daughter.
Yes.
By 5 years' time.
My 14-year-old Evie is on the 5-year plan.
Is that right?
Dad and I have arranged the dowry.
Another international congress.
She's really beautiful, and like she's this tall, willowy, gorgeous creature. 40. And I spoke to her the other day, you know, and I was just saying to her, "We've got this arranged marriage for you." And she was going, "What?" And I said, "Hang on." I said, "But he's like, he's circus school, and he's really gorgeous." And I said, "He's
Dads
got the
are
most
not
beautiful."
Supposed to matchmake, all right?
And I was like talking about you, just saying, "Oh, you should hear his voice. And he's really funky. And he's got piercing." And she was going, "Oh, okay." Because she's like,
me,
boys are horrible, but she was kind of warning.
Oh, okay is high praise. I wish I'd get an oh, okay occasionally.
Yeah. So, Josh, there you go.
Well, okay, so let's go to a break and have a listen to the title track from Through a Sylvan Doorway. Through a Sylvan Doorway. Or is it just a Sylvan Doorway?
Through a Sylvan
Doorway.
Green shadows bow
the rising sun. By the way the ancient trackway runs, cool mist dances in the morning light and skips around the stones. He walks upon the forest path, the antlered one with the oaken staff. Stories lie where his feet pass, among the roots and rocks and bones. The legend whispers through the leaves, visions in the sunlight weave. The waking of the day reveals where the magic lies. On the threshold between the worlds he stands, guardian of these hidden lands. The green woods call at his command, tween water, earth and sky. Of the wild, the ancient folk who dwell beneath the leafy cloak of eucalypt, red gum, elm and oak, and dance the shadowed pathway. Hear the dreaming lines they sing in this realm of the woodland king. You know the green man's song will bring you Sylvan
Brilliant. That was The Amazing Spiral Dance with Through a Sylvan Doorway, the title track from the album of the same name. Now, Nick, as the producer of that album, or the guy that does a lot of the technical stuff, there's something I really wanted to ask you, because I've noticed that it's a double album, and the two albums, the two sides, the two CDs, whatever you call it, they're produced in totally different ways. One's got this amazing sort of, well, for me anyway, this tight structure, the first one, and the second one feels much rawer. Is that a word? Much more raw. It has more energy, more kind of... It's got edges of roughness to it that feel like they're deliberately put there. Was that part of your design?
No.
Right. I'm speaking out of my kilt then, aren't I?
No, look. We all had a say in the way... I mean, the process of everything is you record it, you don't have an order of what way you want the tracks to lay or whatever else before when you do the recording. So everybody goes in, does their part, you know, you do all the layering, blah, 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 and all of that. And after you've done all of that, you do your mix down so everything sounds really nice, then you're mastering, and then we sort of take it. We see what sort of sits nicely next to each other.
Gotcha.
So you basically just take all the tracks and shuffle them around and see what sits next to each other and what's a nice one to follow on.
And can I just butt in at that stage? We didn't have an opening track. We didn't know what to open with because Sylvan Doorway didn't exist.
It's still a poem at that stage.
Yeah. So that's...
that's basically it, really, for that. I mean, it
wasn't conscious. Yeah, I think the energies of the two discs. You're right. There is a
they're
difference,
different,
but I don't think it was conscious. But it was because, as Nick said, they sat better that way, and it kind
with
of
each
had,
other.
A,
yeah.
had a feel, particularly when you've listened to it as Nick did, like 1,000 times in real time with all the mixing and mastering. That you get a feel of what's going to sit, and then and other things just didn't feel in place next to, say, those songs on the first disc. So there is a different energy.
I love it. I think it's one of your best.
I mean, you don't really want to come out of something like Through a Sylvan Doorway into something like one of the other heavy ones, like
The Vampire Song.
Yes.
So you don't really want to sort of smack people in the face when they've got this lovely,
that's right.
feeling, and they've floated off somewhere gorgeous, and then all of a sudden you go. Take that.
I guess they remember you.
Yeah.
It's the same with live set lists. I mean, you know, when we play live, you don't start with your slowest, quietest ballad and then the biggest, song you've got. You kind of build, and depending how long you're playing for, you may raise an audience up, then drop it in the middle and raise them again at the end. So it's that energy you want to keep flowing. Yeah.
That's a tremendous skill. Yeah.
Yeah, when we've got it, we'll tell you about it.
This year you've released a single, which I think is possibly the first single you've released, Wicker Man.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it is.
Have you got any plans for releasing any others?
No. Well,
we're really sort of stopping your interview here, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, you guys are really helping.
Yeah, it's great. When you interview people and they go, yeah.
No, Gary, we've got a number of new songs sitting there, and we wanted something we could bring away with us, especially because we were playing at the Mercian Gathering. And so we decided to release that as a one-off for that, because we want to put that on the next album, basically, as part of the new album. So, and we didn't have time to record anymore, so we just decided to release that as a single, and it celebrates our English Ale. Well, we burn our Wicker Man in Australia in May. We have our gathering when we're going into winter. So the song is actually written to celebrate that event.
And this takes place in the wonderful town of Milo.
I knew I'd get it wrong. Milo in Cornwall.
Named after a Cornish village. Yeah,
It's in the Adelaide Hills.
Set up by Cornish cousin Jacks, I guess.
Yeah. And we do it at after our Samhain, and we have it in May, because it's a time that it's an interesting time of the year then, because we've just gone through a really long hot summer where everything dies back. So January, February, March, everything just dies back, and the land is basically dead. We get our first rains of winter come in April, and the land comes back to life, and suddenly there's irises flowering, and the eucalypt leaves get really fat and juicy again, but also the European leaves, trees are losing their leaves. So it's a very, very weird time compared to what happens over here. So I wanted a song that kind of celebrated everything we do with that. So we celebrate our Englishness and our ancestors and what we do over there, as well as rejoicing in the land coming back to life. So that's why I wrote Wicker Man.
That's a beautiful concept.
We have another song that we've been playing live for a while, but I'd love to be a single, but it won't happen because Adrian said no.
She did
just earlier. You all heard it.
It's on record. Yeah.
And it comes back to other things we've said in this interview and about slowly finding some roots in Australia and a song that's very Australian based has come along.
I think that's really important.
Yes, and I'll let Adrian talk maybe a little bit more about it, but Goddess of the Southern Land is I would love to actually record as a single before it gets released on a new album, but
I think one of the things that's going to be fascinating for our listeners is seeing how your links with the Celtic myths and the Celtic gods have transmuted and have influenced and are being influenced by your experiences down under.
Yeah, and that for me is growing more and more, and that's something I'm exploring now, because as I said before, it was that thing of growing up in a country I didn't think I ever belonged in. So that's all part of that journey, and I think there's a lot of Australian pagans that are going through that as well.
It's an exciting time.
Yeah, it is. Very exciting time.
So is there a new album in the pipeline?
Yeah, but it'll probably take a little bit longer than we suspect, because Nick needs a rest. and I've got, like I said before, I've got a number of songs sitting there, but because We've had changes of lineup in the band and we're all coming over here. That's had to take a little bit of a back seat, but there's stuff sitting there that I'm really excited to be knowing we're going to be working on it, but I have to be patient as well and learn patience, I guess. So, yeah.
What's patience?
I know. And I start nagging these boys and I just go, hang on, slow down. You know?
I think
I want it all now.
Dab over there will get his album out before we do.
Well,
I think we should plug it.
It's going well, actually. Yeah, I stopped here a couple of weeks ago. And it's all good. Yes, I want it out by the by Witchfest, but you can't rush perfection. So, you know...
What can I say? What exactly can I say?
I've got my thumb firmly on my cheek. Okay? No, the thing is, you know, you set yourself deadlines, but you're not going to release something that isn't right. You know, so when it is right, it will come out, and then that will be the album that I will be.
And this is basically what you guys are saying, isn't it? When you're ready, it will be there.
Especially when you're doing so much layering, I guess it's got to be right. And you want it to be right for the people that dig your music as well.
I suppose Dave does all his own sort of production work as well. You know, and I'm a bit of a Nancy like him. You know, people listen to it and go, "Yeah, that sounds awesome," but I'll go, "No, beat 7 and 28 out of this line, not right. I am not happy with that. I want it again.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just one of those things.
And the thing is, you know, unless you get it right, you've got to listen and
forever.
That's it.
Forever.
Yeah.
So there'll be a percentage. Nobody else picks it up.
There'll be a percentage of your listeners that will pick it up. Most may not, but there'll be a percentage that do.
I doubt it if anybody does pick these sorts of things up, because when you're producing a song, you listen to, like, it's done in layers. So the drum tracks go down first, then the bass track goes down, then the guitar, accordion, and then the layering of vocals, and then extra instruments on top of it. So you'll sit there, and when you start the mixing process, you'll listen to each and every hit on the drum and everything like that, and you'll get them sounding perfectly, and it goes. But if one thing's just out of time or whatever, or slightly not right, you've listened to that song 1,000 times even before you've got to the final stage, and that's without a joke, you know, because you go back and listen to a section over and over and over again, and it might be 10 seconds, but you just hear it over and over again, so you get to know it inside out.
And that's the thing, if there's say a slightly slurred hit on a drum, because you're listening to that isolated track, and you're being picky, you hear it. When you find that there's a bass note or a guitar note or something or a vocal over it, once it's actually mixed down, like we say, nobody probably ever notice it. But because we've heard that bass track,
you just know it's there.
And your brain just leaps on it and goes, and you can't live with it.
Well, like a word, when we record Hollywood... I think I sang the word moon about 50 times. Moon.
50?
So you guys are musicians and us as writers and performers in our way, we all suffer the same fate of disease.
You're always striving for the best. Not for yourself, but for the people that you're presenting.
Absolutely.
Best product you can ever give them, basically.
And I often think of the people listening, I think, oh, I hope they really like it, because, you know, you do...
Do you find that something you did 5 years ago, you listen to it and think, oh, my God, I could do so much better now?
Some I do, some I don't. Yeah. Some I really love and I really enjoy, and other ones I don't. So that's just personal.
Yeah. I mean, I listened back to it before I joined the band. Woman of the Earth was released before I joined the band.
The production on that was beautiful.
And the production is, if I could get anywhere near that, I'd be happy. Myself, because
super
the production is just sensational. You know,
interesting.
Stands the test of time, that one, I think.
I think on that note, I think we should probably bring it to an end. So, Spiral Dance and Dave and Kerry,
and Josh,
and young Josh, awesome bass,
son in law.
Thank you very much indeed. And now let's leave you all with your latest single, Wicker Man, from Spiral Dance. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Gary.
Cheers.
Yay!
remember the time of sickles and scythes beneath the blue of late summer skies. Greet the god of grain, the mother of corn, the welcome brew of John Barleycorn. Share the bread, taste the ale of field and vine, hedge and vale. To the gods of old we'll sing our song. And gather for the burning of a wicker man. Burn, burn, wicker man, burn. Fire in the night, not the season turning. The kindred flame of winter's return. The rise of the burning of the wicker man. Burn, burn, wicker man, burn. Hobby horses with bright ribbons fly, wild green men weaving fire pass by. Painted faced mummers with bells on their feet move to the music as the morris sticks beat out the rhythm of fandom. Come, shall we meet and dance around the flames of the wicker man? Burn, burn, wicker man, burn. Fire in the night, feel the season turning. The kindred flame of winter's return. Rise at the burning of the wicker man. Burn, burn, wicker man, burn. Fire in the night, feel the season turning. The kindred flame of winter's return. Rise at the burning of the wicker man. Into the dark southern skies, we stand with our clan and stars on this night, and ask the old gods to witness this rite. So to the fire with your flaming torch, clan. The wintering time of the land has begun. Now we'll await the return of the sun. All that's left are the ashes of the wicker man.
Burn, burn, wicker man, burn. Burning of the wicker man.
fire in the night, build the season turning. The kindred flame of winter's return will rise at the burning of the wicker man. Burn, burn, wicker man, burn. Fire in the night, build the season turning. The kindred flame of winter's return will rise at the burning of the wicker man. Burn, burn, wicker man, burn. Fire in the night, build the season turning. The kindred flame of winter's return will rise at the burning of the wicker man. Burn, burn, wicker man, burn. Fire in the night, build the season turning. The kindred flame of winter's return will rise at the burning of the wicker
Concludes our pint and a chat with Spiral Dance. A massive thanks to Adrienne, Paul and Nick for being so much fun.
And thanks also to Dave the Bard, Kerry Lee and Dave's son Josh for joining us. Oh, and Oscar. And making our chat a real social event. Wasn't it super?
It certainly was. A great time was had by all at the most druid-friendly pub in Sussex. And it's got awards to prove it, you know.
Why, no, I've seen them. I think we've got a photograph somewhere. I'll see if I can find it, dig it out, put it in the show notes.
And if we're lucky, we'll be able to bring you some more of these pint and a chat shows. But maybe not quite so epic. What do you think?
That sounds good to me.
The problem is we just get carried away. People are just so fantastic.
I know. And with those words of wisdom, I think we've come to the end of the show.
Well, not quite. One of our long-term fans, Christy Jackson Nicholas, has just published a couple of e-books about travelling in Ireland and Scotland.
Oh, yes.
She's also a fabulous photographer, isn't she?
Oh, yes.
Well, she sent us this little audio promo to tell us all about her books.
Okay, so let's have a listen to Christy tell us about her books.
Have you ever dreamed of the magic of Ireland or Scotland? Imagined yourself walking among standing stones or in thatched cottages by the sea? Whether you're planning a trip by yourself or traveling vicariously, my ebooks can help you out. Each guide has some myth and history, photographs, tips and tricks to help you plan your own trip, and a huge section of hidden gems to find yourself. Ireland, Mythical, Magical, Mystical, and Scotland, Strange, Stunning, and Secret are both available at tiergearpublishing.com. That's tiergearpublishing.com/authors/Nicholas_Christy, Christy, or at facebook.com/greendragonauthor. And my main website is greendragonartist.com. Formats include Amazon, Smashwords, Apple, Kobo, or Nook. Also, coming in autumn 2015, my first historical fantasy novel set in Ireland in 1846. Watch for Legacy of Hunger. Thank you, and blessed be.
We'll have those details again for you in the show notes.
We will. And so, before we go, we'd like to wish you many, many blessings and say au revoir.
A festival that brings where audience. It's, well said.
Till.
Yeah.
I wonder what it. I thought.
I'm playing keyboards. If Rick had been here, he'd make that high-pitched squealy noise. He's he could do this whistle that sounded like feedback. He'd just sit there going... And it used to be really loud and high-pitched, and the same guys would go... and he'd just be sitting there really quietly. He's us. Yes.
So your
markings
were gorgeously arranged and tastefully
done?
They are tastefully arranged.
Fully erect.
They are fully erect.
They would be used to say that, wouldn't they, Gabe?
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com. We'd also like to say a big thank you to Anne Roos, Master Harper, and Keltoria, with a K, Celtic New Age Music, who have both given the show unrestricted access to their music. And thanks again go to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used as some of the transitions you've heard in this show. You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.